Sunday like this, it's time for Real Talk with Lola. And you know who? Lola is the Nigerian South African praise psychologist, and every week she comes with a guest to talk about real life issues. Real Talk with Lola, and the station is Spirit of Nigeria Radio. And I'm sure Life Radio Ibadan is standing by to join us, our partner station, Life Radio 107.5 FM, where your life matters. Life Radio and Spirit of Nigeria Radio on Real Talk with Lola. Lola, are you ready for us?
Yes, I'm ready. I'm on standby. Thank you so much.
All right, over to you. Now take it away from me.
Yeah, good evening, everybody. This is Real Talk with Lola on Spirit of Nigeria Radio and 107.5 FM Ibadan. Yes, and as usual, like I always say every Sunday, I'm a clinical psychologist, and my main purpose is to bring about a psychological modification through media. And why do I do that? We just need to try and see how we can help in modifying people's behavioral patterns. My guest today, to me, is something very dear to my heart, because it's a topic that I, as a psychologist, have been wanting to touch for so long. And I always felt one of the best medium is to go through the media, because we can reach more people. And what am I talking about? I'm talking about stigma. I'm talking about mindset. I'm talking about emotional wounds that only you can heal yourself with. And today I've put all together and put it under a topic called My Truth. And what I mean by my truth is, it's only you as a person who have gone through it that can understand the pain, the emotional, I call it an emotional roller coaster that the person has gone through. And the healing can only come from within. And my guest tonight is no other than Precious Egoigbe. And Precious' story is something I would love my listeners to listen to. I mean, it's not basically as what she's representing, but the pain and how she overcame it, and how she can reach out to other people going through something similar or something close by, and know that, look, you know what? If you can't change something, you make the best of it. And that's why I said, sometimes the process of turning lemons to lemonades can be, you know, frustrating, but at the end of the day, we'll get there. Hi, Precious, how are you?
I'm fine. Good evening.
Good evening. Yes, and can you just tell us a little bit about yourself before we just dive in?
Okay, my name is Precious Egoigbe, as you all already have heard, and I'm a mother of two beautiful albino children, and I'm a theologian as well as an educator, so I love children generally, and I'm always around church things, if you can put it that way. So that's basically me, and I'm a writer as well. Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, Precious, like I said, we're going to, your story is intriguing for me, because I know that for every young person, when they get married, I mean, one of the things as Africans, especially as Nigerians, what we look forward to is having kids. I mean, it's like a done deal, you know. It's something I've gone through, and I know what it's all about. So for you as a first-time mom, and then you give birth, and then you give birth to those precious, the first precious child, how was it for you?
That's a big question. How was it for me? It was interesting. It was an adventure. Now, I had my first child. I always remember, before I had her, I always remember my mom told me that when I was born, she actually thought I was an albino child, because when she looked at my skin, I was very white, because it runs in the family, actually. I have four of them. In my dad's lineage, I have three uncles and an aunt, my late aunt of blessed memory. They are all albinos, and No, so she was thinking I was one of them, and she used to jokingly tell me that it was when she saw my hair, it was dark. She said, okay, this one escaped, you know, that kind of joke. So I had that at the back of my mind that I could have one. I knew it runs in the family. So when I had my daughter, I had a very painful birth, and I was so glad I had given birth finally. So her complexion didn't bother me at all. I was actually laughing. I was so smiley. All the doctors were like, why are you laughing? So, and a nurse was like, oh, she's so glad to have given birth. So I had no problem with the color. And then the next morning I held my baby. I was so proud of myself. I had finally brought forth life. Not until I got home and started facing the world. That was when I realized that having an albino child was like... It was like I had done something wrong to society, you know. It wasn't something they really accepted. I could some people don't even have to open their mouths to tell you that what have you given birth to, in quote. Their male look at you and your newborn, you already know that these ones, they've looked down on me first of all because of the complexion of my child. And then I got this. Everywhere we go with our baby, our newborn, everywhere we go, myself and my husband will just get this, now I've been on you born. You know, those kind of reactions and everything. At a point, it was getting so annoying. And, you know, that was what really happened when I had my baby. When I had my baby, I had her with joy. That was my first. Not talk of when I had my second. When I had my second, my bone was already strong as at that time. But when I had my first, I was already, you know, I was not expecting the reaction I got from society, and that was what broke me. That was what broke me down. When, you know, the worst part of it, the one that really got to me, was the day I was going to the market. That was when I really started hiding myself and my child. I was going to the market just to get something, because basically that time I was mostly alone. My husband would usually go to work. I'll be alone in the house. So I wanted to rush to the market nearby. So I put my baby on the back. She was about 3 months there about. So I was taking her out to the market. And a group of young ladies just came out from nowhere, and they just kept shouting, see how now Bino she born, oh God forbid, to feel like, you know, they were just shaming me in the middle of the road, as if I was carrying a curse on my back. It was so, you know, I was really, really young, so it got to me. I felt so, I couldn't even explain in words how I felt that day, but I was broken. And if the way I am now is what I was then, it wouldn't have gotten to me. But then, as a first-time mom, I felt so bad. I loved my baby, but I didn't understand why people would not just accept her for who she was. And, you know, I took her back home. After then, I will hide her. I'll wait for her to sleep off, hide her in the house before I go out quickly within 15, 20 minutes to go and do whatever, even if it's in the market, and run back. Then when I started work, I couldn't keep her at home anymore. I had to go back, put her in the crèche and all that. On my way back home, I had to look for a school where I knew that both the teachers and everybody accepted her with love. Okay, that was settled. But on my way back home, entering public transport, that's where I started meeting some unkind fellows. Imagine a woman pushing me one day, almost pushing me out of the car, and looking at me from up to down like, who is this young girl? And I was like, how come you have an albino child? Is that how much you laughed at them when you were pregnant? You know, that kind of mentality. So she actually believed that because I laughed at albino people while I was pregnant, that is why I had an albino child. First of all, the ignorance got to me. Like, you don't even know much about something. You can't find out about it, and then you are using it to shame somebody else. And I was breastfeeding my child. Normally, mothers, they are concerned for each other. You know, when you're carrying a little baby like that, if a regular mother would have been like, okay, let's give you more space or adjust the neck, you know, something like that. Those that are kind, they respond well. But in the case of this one, she just like, please shift to that side. You weren't born albino. You know, that kind of response. So it was really... Wow. It was really something for me. I felt so bad. But, you know, I kind of drew strength from it. I told myself that since the whole world has decided to treat me, or rather the world around me then has decided to treat me like this, I would on my own sit down and look for how to take care of this child. She would be, in fact, it was a driver. I entered a vehicle one day going back home, and a driver looked at me and said, they are so fine when they are young, but when they grow up, they'll turn to something else. And I started asking myself, why is it that they turn to something else? And that's when I started doing more research. Actually researched on their skincare as though I had a project work at hand. So I researched, I'm telling you the truth, and I researched on it and found out what causes, you know, those spots, those freckles, and I made up my mind that if I'm going to be giving birth to albino children, they are going to be the best albino children on earth, and they are going to be the most beautiful. That was the kind of mind I went into taking care of the skin of my child back then. Now, all those experiences I had, you know, made me at some point, you know, when you keep thinking, you have no one to talk to, you fall into depression. You know, my husband then, he was very busy. Each time he comes back, you know, he doesn't even want to hear the topic. He doesn't want to hear that somebody shamed his child or anything. That kind of topic did not go well with him. So I had no one to reach out to. Or rather, I felt I had no one to reach out to. So it started eating me up, and that was when I became suicidal twice. I actually wrote suicide notes and kept for my husband and kept this baby somewhere very cozy in the parlor, as in my mind was to actually stand up and go in the middle of the road for a moving vehicle to hit me, because I tried different methods of suicide. I'm telling you, that's when I knew that I don't have mind to actually kill myself. I'm that single-minded. I took razor blade. I could not bear to cut myself. I took knife. I couldn't bear drinking something, and I'll feel, I said, okay, let me just go. Let it be that I'll just put my wahala on somebody else's head. Let Moto just come and jam. And I made up my mind I was going to go to the room. But each time I stand up, I will look at the child. The last time I did that, I looked at the child and I'm like, so who will take care of this child? Who is going to, you know, love her the way you do? Because I knew I loved her. Who is going to love this child? So I kept looking at her, and God helping me, I just broke down, cried. Each time I cried everything out, cried. And thank God I didn't go through with it. And luckily for me, I sat one day in an event. Prior to that time, I don't even attend events, because I tried once or twice events of friends, no friends that went to school together. I remember going for a friend's wedding. Walking up to where they were, you know, when your friend is getting married, you have access to the inner room to go and greet and say, congratulations. I went to that kind of place, and if you see the way everybody turned to look at me with my child, as if who is this one? Even the friend that I went to be looking at me like, what's she doing here? Oh my God, I felt so, that was when I made up my mind, I am not going for any occasion. So when I have invitations, I look for excuse, or I totally blank out, I don't come at all. I just keep myself and my child. That was how I was living my life. Until that very moment, I think it was something, I followed my husband for something somewhere in a church, and I just sat down, and someone that knew me, she just rushed up to me, you know, with so much excitement, and I'm like, oh wow, you have an albino baby. Your baby is beautiful. She was just stuck. She didn't even let me say a word. She was just saying, this is beautiful. I have two elder siblings. They are like this. They are just like this, and they are beautiful. It is just that then we didn't have much wisdom. My parents didn't know what to do. They were sending them to farm, and you know, they were exposed to the sun. Please don't expose this baby to the sun. Take care of her. You know, she gave me so much encouragement, so much advice, told me what to do to keep dressing her up. And I was like, so there is someone on earth, even one person that appreciates this kind of child, then there's no reason for me to kill myself now. Why have I been trying to kill myself? Even if it's one person, half a human being other than myself and my family members that appreciates this skin color, then I have work to do. So I intensified my search. I found, you know, so many works online, so many stories too of people that have had this thing. I got to separate myths from facts. you know, some people talk about what they eat and what they don't eat. So I got to separate those things. Right now, my children, the way they are, they eat normally and they are fine. So I got to learn a lot of skincare things, and I just turned it into something that when people actually saw my daughter, they'll be like, ah, she's so beautiful. How are you taking care of this child? What are you doing? So I became a proud mother. It turned around. I became a proud mother. It became a good thing for me.
I mean, I was going to say that, you know, like you rightly said, you turned around. I mean, what you did was you made your weakness into a strength for yourself at the end of the day, right? Is that
yes,
it?
Yes.
You dive into it. But I want to go back on something, okay? And that is the fact that you said something while you were talking, and that is very important, that number one, you had nobody to talk to. Basically, when you gave birth to the baby in the hospital, there was nobody was there to talk to you, right? Was there? I mean, just to put you, because you're a new mother, nobody was actually there to explain to you that, okay, you know what? This is not like a regular numb baby. Maybe do you think if somebody had sat you down and maybe put you a little bit through that, do you think you would have coped better? Or do you think society, the Nigerian society itself, just has a stigma for such children?
Yes, I think the Nigerian society has a stigma for such children. I say it because even at the hospital, somebody sitting me down to talk to me was not even in the picture. Mm-hmm. To the extent of the fact that some of the nurses that actually were there when I gave birth to my child, I came back to that hospital for immunization. There was a particular elderly nurse that still lingers in my memory till tomorrow. That woman would touch my child with the tip of her fingers. I can't lie about that kind of. She would touch my child. She would make sure it's the tip of her finger. I see the way she handles other babies. At 6 weeks, when I brought that child back, from the BCG, the first one, from BCG, that was when she started handling my child, down to the last immunization, I almost stopped going there. But I just overlooked it. Like, I didn't want to start changing health centers, like going to a different center. That's why I just stuck with it and kept going there with my card. She always, each time it got to our turn, if I greet her, she doesn't respond to the greeting. She just holds my baby's leg or arm with the tip of her fingers, gives the injection or whatever she's giving. And then, so there was no, the stigma was everywhere. It's just the Nigerian society.
And how was, I mean, because now you're married, I can understand your family. If I may ask, how did your husband's family take it?
That one is a big question. Okay, my husband's family.
We know we are people now. I mean, they come with the stories of maybe one ancestor, because I remember they will tell you maybe you walked in the night or maybe one masquerade. So how did they take it? I want to know. I'm intrigued.
Okay, this question is a question I thought I'll run away from, but I'm here. Okay, let's answer it. All right. Actually, my husband's family, they didn't take it that bad. You know, my own family, they were aware that, okay, it's in the family. So it's in the genes. But they don't really have, I think the only thing they were doing each time I'm around, they just keep arguing among themselves, not to me directly. They'll be like, hey, who is that person? Hey, so-so person was white, too. So-so person, Peter, something like that. They'll just be arguing one kind of, and I'll just sit down and be looking at them. You know? But they never directly said anything to me about it, but they always kept trying to figure out where did the gene come from. It's just that each time I'm even till date, each time I'm around, they still somehow refer to the complexion of my children. But there was no cruel attack. No cruel words from no cruelty directly from them. Whatever cruelty I had, whatever stigma, it was outside. It was friends. Maybe friends around them, not them directly.
Okay. When we come back from a break, I mean, that's before we go on this break, we'll dive more into the impact. But I want to ask you another question. I know it wasn't one, but I know it was two. Yes. Now, tell me, I can imagine one slap, but you having two slaps. Hey, how did you get up?
Two slaps. Do I have enough time to talk about that right now? Okay. The second one, I was prepared for it, but it's like some persons around me were not prepared for it. So the second time around, actually had a family member referring to the fact that she has given birth to another one again.
Wow.
Right there in the hospital. You know, I'm writing a book on this. Inside my book, My Journey as a Mother with Albino Babies, you'll find that segment. I put in that part where I sat on the hospital bed. I was watching everyone's reaction as they were coming in. And I saw that particular reaction of that person I will mention.
Wow.
And I smiled. I'm like, okay. So that was where it started from. And then some people will just come in, she has another white one. That's talking about outsiders now, not within the family. Oh, another white. Okay, another one. It's okay. Don't worry. When my mother had a child, the second one was darker than the first one. After some time, the color will be going down. You know, they will just be giving you history that you did not, unsolicited history and advice. Don't worry, after 2 weeks, you see the color, you start, I just folded my hands and started looking at them. Or hear someone tell you, don't worry, don't even talk about it. That's, see my beautiful white baby, that don't talk about it. No, it shouldn't come from me. I say, see, problem. I even told one woman, I said, but I like the complexion of my babies. I'm not complaining. No. I was expecting it because I have one. My husband had jokingly told me before that this one, we have one. All our children might end up being like this. So I said, no problem if it's what God gives us. So when the person was like, don't even talk about it, I say, but madam, I like them now. She said, no, it shouldn't come from me. I said, see me, see problem.
What you're trying to tell the audience is that, I mean, after the first one, the second one was not so hard for you to take the pain. I wouldn't call it pain anymore, because to me, it is something that you are mentally prepared. No, you were emotionally prepared for, just in case it happened.
Yes, I was.
And so when it happened, it didn't take you unawares like the first one.
No, it didn't. I remember my mother-in-law looked at me and she said something that made me glad. She just looked at me and like, wow, you have another beautiful one. Okay, the same way you took care of the first one, please take care of this one for us like that. We want him to be beautiful. And I was proud.
That's so sweet.
Yes, it was. That means I had done a good job, so I should keep up the good work.
So when we come back from our break now, I'll be able to take questions and ask you more things, especially your truth, your mindset, as in, you know, you went through, it was like a roller coaster, especially the suicidal part. And how was help finally given to you? Did you ever seek help and all those kind of things? When we come back from the break now, we'll be able to dive into that. I hope the radio line is ready to go on a break.
Tobalo gueru koyawo.
Nigerians in diaspora up to speed. And of course, Real Talk with Lola will continue after that beautiful piece of music celebrating children. And of course, our discussion has been on children. Over to you, Lola.
Yeah, thank you so much. And Precious, I hope you're still there.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, thanks, Precious. I think that was a very apt music for what we're talking about, because you see, the music basically says that children are like the elephants of the earth, you know, what we live on earth. And that is, I mean, no matter what the child is, at the end of the day, I always say a child is a child. And I'm talking with Precious, who is a mother of two albino babies. So, Precious, before we went on break, I asked you a very interesting question, and that was the fact that going through what you went through, you know, not one baby, not two babies, and two babies, you went through a path which was quite on the brink of committing suicide, like you rightly said yourself. Did you ever seek, or was there professional help for you?
Okay. All through the time that I went through those moments where I was suicidal, there was no time I really sought for help, or rather, I didn't even know where I could get help, or maybe go to see a counselor or something. I don't know if you get me. Our Nigerian society, they don't really pay attention. You know, when you say someone is depressed, sometimes we don't see depression as a thing. We just see,
you'll be fine. You'll be fine. You'll get over it. Go and drink water.
Exactly. It was even because of my research on my daughter's skin. That was when I even discovered there was something called PTSD. I had PTSD from the birth of
post-traumatic
stress disorder.
Most first-time mothers, funny enough, with my own research, I mean, I went through, but I mean, and I'm talking of 24 years ago, I went through, but I've realized now professionally that most first-time mothers go through it.
Yes.
But in Nigeria, we don't know, because we have the communal way of taking care of mothers, you understand? So you don't really feel it, or you don't have the time to express it.
Yes, there's no time to express it, but it's there. You know, the pressure is there. You are just, you feel as if the whole world is on your head. I had that one from having a baby, first of all the trauma around, especially when you don't have a really easy birth. Your birth is so traumatic and you had so much drama around it. So that one was by the wayside then, and I had to add this other part of, you know, having a child born with albinism. So it was a challenge to me, but I didn't know who to talk to. I didn't even know I could talk to someone. Like I said, if we roll back, I had my daughter 7 years ago. If we roll back 7 years ago and bring it now, I won't be in that same position. I'll seek help. Because now I understand that there are, you know, counselors, professionals that can actually handle such conversations. That even if you can't talk to everyone around you, you can actually go meet them to talk to them. But then I didn't know. I had no one to advise me. And the only person I could once in a while reach out to was my dad. But I still could not give him details of what I was really going through. I couldn't tell him I was suicidal because I felt it would break him. One part I have not added to my story, that I'm an only child. So I couldn't let my parents know that I was trying to take my life. to break them because I'm the only one they've got. So my husband, the topic was a little bit touchy for him, so I couldn't. So the only help that would have been gotten was professional help. But I had no one to actually advise me, suggest to me, or you know, refer me to someone. So that was the case in my own case. But I knew if I had sought for help, it would have really helped me. It would have.
Yeah, you see, I totally feel you, Precious. But I'm going to ask you one question that somebody just sent in now. If the hospital you used, do you think that if professionally the hospital you used in Nigeria, if they had maybe given you like a counsel, do you think you would have felt better, even if society, I mean, because to be honest with you, we can't really detect what society does. You understand? Because you see, these are beliefs that have come from our great 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 grandfather. You know, it's just a myth that people have about albino kids. Because I would be very honest with you, even me as an educated person, it took me time to realize that there was this myth going on around then that when you are pregnant and you saw an albino child, there was a 99% chance that you would have one. And just like you, when I'm being honest with you, I mean, we get educated over time. And I remember that when I had my first son, he was really very light-skinned. And I remember the first question I asked was he an albino? And somebody asked me, why did I ask that question? But I couldn't tell the person the reason, you understand? Because I had come across an albino friend that had an albino kid then. So I was really frightened all throughout my delivery. But with you now, you knew that, okay, it was in your bloodline. There was a possibility of it happening. So your problem wasn't your bloodline. Your problem was society, Nigeria, Nigerians and society in general. So do you think that, maybe, what do you think as a person can change that mindset about people and the things they do, like the woman in the bus, for example?
Okay, I think it's more of awareness. The more people get aware that these myths are just myths, they are not facts, they are not scientific facts, and you know, the world has evolved. We are not living in the dark ages anymore. We are living in the 21st century. And in this century, we know now that these people are just normal people who lack no certain things in their body. That's why they cannot be like us. They lack melanin. That's why they can't have our skin color, you know? So that is why they are like that. If I'd had maybe a counselor, you know, such people in the hospital, that their job is to actually counsel patients, a psychologist or someone, and they walk up to me and they know that, okay, people like this, mothers like this, will have challenges in a Nigerian society. It would have gone a long way, because I actually remember, you know, funny enough, no matter how long it is, I remember almost every word everybody said to me after I had myself. Every word. So a psychologist would have helped, because I would have always referred back to that counseling session. Okay, this was what I was told. It would have prepared my heart for what I was to face. It would have prepared me and gone a long way. And better still, I would have had someone to go back to in those my suicidal moments. It would have been a platform to say, okay, there's a psychologist in the hospital that is a stranger to me, it's not family, it's not friends, that I can go consult. At least this person was actually there to counsel me when I had my baby. So if such things are placed in hospitals, it will actually help. You know, this thing we are saying now is something I'm personally doing now as, you know, as a mother with two albino children. So what I do now is that if you have an albino child and you reach out to me, I make myself like a mentor. I tell them, whenever you need me, just I'm just a DM away, just a message to me. Ask me any question on there. I'll reach out to you. I know, and I talk to them with love. I make them feel that, yes, they have golden children. They have the best children on earth. So I just personally do that as a personal thing. So,
you know, that's like giving back.
Yes, Yes, that's what I do now, because it's something I never had when I had both children. I never had someone to like help me out, you know, reach out to me and say, okay, you are not alone. This is, it's of recent, I'm getting that around me here. It's of recent, okay, very recent.
Have you ever thought of the fact that, and I don't know if it's true, but I've heard that there are situations when people have albino kids that they actually, you know, maybe because now you were in a more civilized place, but I'm told in the villages, they can actually ostracize you and tell you to leave the village or something. Have you heard of such stories?
Yes, oh, really? I've heard of worse stories. I've heard of even the father of the child chasing the mother away with the child, or leaving the woman and the baby, as the case may be, and running away. I've heard of the ostracizing. In fact, I was told that in my mom's village, it was a custom in those days to chase away the person, and the person must not urinate in the land. That if he urinates in the land will be cursed. They will actually chase the albino person out, and any other family member that wants to go with his or him or her.
Okay, now let's come back present.
Okay.
How is the mental state? I'll use the word the mental state of your children and their emotional state. Have you made them know that, look, you know what? Like I always say to children with such things, like God just spent extra time because you're special.
Yes.
Do they ask you questions?
They ask me questions, numerous. In fact, handling the psychological aspect of bringing them up is even more technical than every other thing. Not easy to handle the psychology of a human being. It's not. You know, sometimes my daughter, she's getting older. She's almost 7. So she comes back to school and she says, Mommy, why am I white? She just asked me a straight up question as if I'm God. So I'm like, what kind of thing is this? You know, there was a day she came back, she was so moody. I said, what's going on? She said, nobody played with me in school today. I said, why? I said, because I'm white. I said, no, it can't be because you are white. So I had to take my time, listen to her, and now, okay, I now understood that, because these are friends that have been playing with her before now, so I knew that it was beyond that. So I discovered, okay, it was children issues, it was not because of her skin color or something. So I just had to educate her, you know, tell her who she is, she's a princess, you know, just try to, you know, educate. And at the end of that conversation, it worked. I didn't even expect that the few words I would say. I just saw her face change. She was now so happy. She even jumped and hugged me. I was like, what did I say? You know, she was so excited because she came with this gloomy feeling of I'm different. That is why they don't want to hang around me. So, you know, once in a while.
Have your children been exposed to other albino children?
Not often, once in a while. They see other children like them just once in a while. Nothing, they just stare. You know, they are still little. I remember my 3-year-old, the other day I was driving out of the house and he says, Mommy, I want to be like that. He pointed out the window. I said, like how? He said, like them. I didn't understand. I said, okay, you want to play like them? He said, no, I want to be black like them. I said, you can't be black like them. You are beautiful, wonderfully made, just the way you are. And there are other white people like you, and they are all beautiful. He was like, really? Okay. So there's a foundation I'm planning to join that we actually aid them. It's a group of mothers that have children like me, right here in Akwa Ibom. I got introduced by a mother that met me somewhere that has, you know, one of them. So she introduced me to it. So I'm planning to join it. And I was asked to bring my kids. So I'm sure when I get there, I will see so many other children like them. And I know it will also, also help their psychology when they see so many people like them.
And again, another thing I wanted to point out to you as a professional is, I think many Nigerians, and I would say this with confidence, I think one of the problems many Nigerians have is that they're not aware of the fact that they are psychologists, and I'm going to be very honest with you. Even there is a group called SINS, which is suicide is not an option, which looks at, I mean, you can even tell people when you get to your group in Akwa Ibom how they can always join this group. Because you see, basically, one of the things I notice is that people die because of lack of knowledge. You understand? There are a lot of psychologists out there. There are a lot of counselors out there. There's a, like I said to you, there's a group which I would send to you, which you should pass on to people. It's called SINS. And what do they do in this group? They educate people. They let people know that, you know, having suicidal thoughts is, I mean, I cannot channel what your thoughts will be, you understand? But I can help you to reprogram those thoughts. So, I mean, people would have suicidal thoughts like you did during your own time, you understand? Yeah. But if you had known that there were groups that, like that, that could actually reach out, that you could reach out to, you know, and one of the things I noticed in Nigeria, most especially, and all over the world, is that, you know, with things like what you're going through, like especially suicidal thoughts, people do not like to be put out there. You understand? Mm. And one of the good things about this group is that you can be as anonymous as possible. And they have a whole load of professionals that can help you. Okay. Or help people. Yeah. And I mean, and I'm very sure you're surprised, okay? It's called SINS. I will send you, at the end of the program, I will send you a lot of flyers that has to do with them. There's going to be a program very, very soon, I think, next week. You understand? So you put it on your platform. I think we've gotten to the stage where, like I said, one of the reasons why I run this program is because we need to have a behavioral modification. We need to change the way we think, the way we do things, and especially when it comes to our emotions, we need to reprogram it and know that, you know what, I'm going through this. If there's no way out of it, how do I live with it? Mm. You understand? And that is exactly what you did. And I really, when I ran into you, I was really taken aback because I just said to myself, this is somebody that has turned a situation into something. I mean, you can't change it. Let's be frank with ourselves. Like you said to your son, which is very, very good of you. I don't think there are pills out there to turn them into black anyway. I've not read about that yet. I don't think so. You understand? But what I think you should do as a mother is you need to prepare them for the future. You need to prepare them for the world. Because A, they're going to run into so many roadblocks. Mm. They're going to run into so many roadblocks. They're going to run into situations that you are not there at that point in time to fight it for them. You understand? So what are you trying to do? You need to raise warriors. You need to raise people that can face the world. And that is one of the things I think psychologically you need to let them get prepared. You need to have that. It's a talk that will happen. But when you yourself don't know, but it needs to happen, you need to sit them down and say, look, guys, this is why you are like this. There are people like you around. But unfortunately, the world doesn't seem to understand you very well yet. But over time, we're hoping that over time, it will get to that time when the world would understand them. So, I mean, that's a talk I think you should have with them. But as for the society that we are in, I think for the past generation, there's really nothing we can do about that anymore, to be honest with you, because you cannot change the mindset of our grandmother than what they know. We can only look towards the future now. And one of the things looking towards the future is to start educating people, letting people know better that, look, this thing has nothing to do with demons or maybe something you did. I think it's just a genetic factor that nobody can change. You understand? Because people say a lot of things about it. So, like somebody asked right now, that if you were to change something, what would you change? Tell me.
If I was to change something, that's in when I had my daughter.
Yeah.
Okay. If I was to change something, I would have changed the fact that I spent too much time wallowing in self-pity and hiding my baby when I should be flaunting her. That was the only thing I regret. I regret not flaunting my children on time. Actually, I feel I cheated my daughter because my son got a lot of flaunting. So if I were to turn back the hands of time right there from the hospital, I'll carry a megaphone and announce to the whole hospital, "Hey, I just had a wise baby and she's so beautiful."
Oh. Then...
Yes, that's what
I understand the feeling, and I really do appreciate you being out here to, I mean, share your story with people, because one thing I notice about Africans generally is we tend to hide our stories because you don't want people to know. But you have shown that you're a proud mother of white, I like the word white babies, you know. I like the word white babies. Yeah, you've shown the world that you're a proud mother of white babies, and that, you know, with time you're open, and I'm open for your sake that people will be able to look at things from a different perspective, and I mean, just have a general mindset change about how things are being done. And, you know, knowing maybe not everybody will be able to research like you did, but people will be able to be more maybe acceptable to what they see around them. You understand? Just look at the albino child as, okay, this is just another person with a different color. And again, with all the myths we hear about the albino children, since you have two, can you please, before we go, clear some air about it? We're told they can't go out in the sun. We're told when they eat salt, they would have spots all over their body. You know, there's just so much going on about them. So can you just clear the air about some of the myths that we hear about them?
Okay, the going out in the sun is not really a myth, it's a fact. Going out in the sun, it affects their skin, could cause skin cancer, which is a major thing.
Oh, really?
That's why the government in Nigeria, I think the federal government now, is rising up to aid some of them, able to purchase some of these sunscreens, because some of these things are very expensive. You know, my daughter started reacting to the sun. I had to go the extra mile, look for sunscreens. Thank God for my sister-in-law, that's the only sister of my husband, that sent me, she's outside the country, so she sent me some good sunscreens. I started using it on her, and her skin normalized. So actually, sun is not good for them at all. They have to wear them, you know, have to cover their bodies with good clothes to prevent both sun and mosquito bites and insect bites generally. And then also sunshades, because of their eyesight. Some of them affect their eyesight, some of them it doesn't. So, you know, when they go out, they tend to squint, so you can wear them hats, caps, and, you know, sunshade, as the case may be. But for the salt and pepper thing, that one is a myth, a pure myth. Like I said, my children eat very well. You know, when I say hearing the salt thing, I say, how can somebody be eating like a deity, like a goddess or something? How does someone eat like that? You know, on my own, because naturally I'm a little bit stubborn. I don't really believe everything I hear at once. So I just tried it. I said, okay, if it affects the skin, I will know I'll be. Let me start giving. So I saw that it didn't. Before I now later found out that it was just a myth. There is nothing like salt and pepper. They eat normally. The thing that affects their skin, that causes everything bad, is the sun, because they lack melanin to protect them from the sun. So if they are exposed to the sun, then they can get all manner of things. Freckles, spots, skin cancer, which is the worst of them all. So they need to protect them. But every other myth, those ones are just myths. Every other thing you hear about, I've been on this, they don't eat salt, they don't rub this, they can use anything, they are okay. They are just people, normal people like you and I.
Wow. I don't even know what to say. So Mari, before we close, we have about 5 more minutes to go. What is your closing words to my listeners?
Okay, I really appreciate this time out that you all have taken to listen to me telling my story. And I would like to tell you, the next time you see an albino person out there, just show love to them, be kind to them. You know, the change starts from you and I. if one person changes, another person changes their mindset about a particular set of people, then everything changes eventually. And then in case you're out there, you're having suicidal thoughts, it might not be albinism, it might be anything that's happened. Maybe you've had a cesarean section, something happened, and the world is just stigmatizing you. Hey, you don't need to kill yourself. You are more precious than that. There's a whole life ahead of you. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Precious. I mean, thank you so much. Like I said, I will send you the flyer about the SINS thing. I think it's something you should actually look into, because you've gone through the path of suicidal thoughts, and it's something I know that if you look into it, you'll be able to direct more people to that lane. So thank you so much for coming on at such notice. I really, really enjoyed having this talk
all
with
right,
you. And
Lola,
I'm hoping
Lola,
that,
don't worry. She's already a volunteer. She's going to join us. She's going to join Suicide is No Solution initiative. She's already a volunteer, I can tell you.
Yeah. Because when she told me her story, I was going to tell. By the way, Precious, that's my organ on the line there. It's my organ. Okay. It's one of the characters that I've been staying in my marriage. So my lifeline is talking to me. You know, like I'm very happy you brought up the suicidal thing, and I was going to bring it in last. I knew we had talked about it and all. And like I said to you, one of the most important things you can do for us as a person is to put the word out there.
Yeah,
there is a place you can turn to if you have suicidal thoughts. There are psychologists, there are psychiatrists, there are people, there are counselors, there are people out there who are ready to help, and there are places you can go to. So I will send the flyer to you. You need to reach out to other young mothers, especially the ones with situations that need to talk to people. Suicide is not an option.
All right, thank
there's
you
always
very
a
much,
solution.
Lola. Yes. You got it all correct. Suicide is no solution. And of course, that will be September 10. We'll be having that webinar, World Suicide Prevention Day. All right, thank you very much, Lola, for being a good sport again today. And thank you very much, Precious. Boygbe, you did a wonderful job. At some point, I thought you were going to break down, but you skilled through it. Congratulations. All right. Thank you very much. Okay. Dr. Ron is next on Spirit of Nigeria Radio. And, of course, my crew is waiting at the top of the hour. It will be time for Dr. Ron on Spirit of Nigeria Radio.
If I fail, then go laugh me. Now my mama, now him bath me. Them is excuse, they slap me. Same people when I turn, they go yab me.